Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn, and joining me today to discuss Manchester United against Spurs is Brish. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, Carl. Not too bad.
And our resident Chelsea fan, Hanif, how's it going, mate?
Afternoon, pal. Nice to be back.
So it was a thoroughly entertaining 2-2 draw between United and Spurs yesterday, but we have to be honest and say that Spurs were the better team, and having watched the game and looking at the stats, that certainly backs up that point of view, with Spurs having 64% possession, 16 shots to United's 9, they had 6 on target to United's 2, which were obviously the 2 goals. And they had 555 passes to United's 313. Having said that, Scott McTominay had a glorious chance to win the game right at the end, but didn't manage to put away Garnacho's fabulous cross. So, Brish, what was your thoughts on the game overall then?
Yeah, much like what you just mentioned, mate. On reflection, I think, you know, a draw is probably fair. We could have nicked it right at the end with McTominay's chance, but we probably would have stolen the points, to be honest. They were the better team, in all honesty. No midfield balance. Maino needs help. I was watching much of that game thinking Maino needs another Maino next to him.
Yeah, and I questioned the substitutions in the game. I felt that Casemiro should have came on for Eriksen and not McTominay, and I didn't understand the taking Rashford off and bringing Anthony on, because I thought Rashford was our biggest threat on the day. So once again, Ten Hag's substitutions were a bit baffling. So Hanif, what did you make of the game then?
I had Man United winning the game before kickoff. I thought United would steal it 3-2 because over the course of the season, it seemed as if United can get over the line, especially at home. I look at Man United and it's pretty similar to the club I support. And, you know, you've got a team playing low in confidence. There's a lot of issues at Manchester United with individuals, which includes the manager as well as the players and the ownership. Tottenham had a lot of the ball, but could you say they did enough to score? I don't know. I think obviously Timo came in, and I know it was a full strength Tottenham side, but I didn't think they did enough. I felt like Manchester United created a lot of their own problems, especially from defending from corners. You know, I'll give Tottenham one thing. That Pedro Porro's, the way he can whip a ball in. Wow, we were watching him and I just thought, this guy's amazing at whipping a ball in, isn't he? But then I think Ten Hag didn't recognize the issue that he had tactically, because Pedro Porro was coming into the midfield, and that there were overloads within the midfield which he didn't address, and as a result of that, Tottenham were very, very good in the middle. Because when you look at the Tottenham midfield, apart from Bentancur, I didn't think Skip and Højbjerg were going to do that much, but they did that much because Manchester United tactically were not set up right. If you're not set up right, you're going to have issues in the middle, and if you control the middle of the park, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win the game. But I thought Rashford had an up and down game where he had a lot of opportunities in terms of space, and when he did make the right decision in the second half, he scores. But then he gets himself into these positions where when he's one-on-one, it feels as if time freezes when he's on the ball one-on-one, because you know what's going to happen. So I thought Højlund, you know, fair play to him. Really happy to see the young lad. I feel for young players at big clubs, because I just feel that the pressure on them is immense. And fair play to him. Got his goal. But because he is a new lad in this Man United team, and the goal came very early, you needed a bit more from him, if you know what I mean. A bit like what Richarlison offered Tottenham. You need a bit more, but I thought he took his goal really well, and fair play to him. I just think Manchester United need need to do what Spurs are doing. I don't think they're doing anything spectacular in terms of playing attacking football. I think loads of clubs can do what Ange is doing. It's just, can you get these guys to play in that way with confidence? And I think that's what it is. It's confidence to just go there and play attacking football. I don't know if you guys saw anything special from Spurs, but I didn't. I just felt they pushed forward and they weren't afraid of like committing themselves. Yes,
they were just set up better tactically, Hanif. I think the disappointing thing for me was probably the fact that they had key players out and still managed to turn up.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, when you think about it, right, even United of us have had a few key players missing now and again. I think you can only play with what you've got when, and if whoever's available at the time, that's who's available. I think when you look at the scoreline and when you look at the performance, it is a fair reflection of the result. I know Spurs probably had more control and more of the ball, but United were in it. And just to make a point on what Kyle said about McTominay, I personally feel that McTominay came onto the pitch because he was a threat in the box. And I think that's the only reason that chance came to him. And I think in previous games, McTominay has scored. So, and I think that was the main reason why McTominay was substituted rather than Casemiro coming on. Unfortunately, obviously, he missed the target, and I think that was the main reason. But I think you can build on it. I think Rashford was better. I'm not saying he was great, but it was an average performance for Rashford. Wan-Bissaka defensively was good. Dalot was good first half. I just think you need to. Bruno was, apart from a few passes here and there, he was very quiet. Eriksen was non-existent. And I think these are the things that Ten Hag needs to address. But the problem is, do you have the personnel to address them this season? That is a big question.
The issue with McTominay, and I don't want to do a whole show on McTominay again because I'm bored of that, but you sacrifice more than you gain by playing McTominay. And he's there to get a goal, as you say, but he scored a couple against you guys on the 6th of December. But apart from that, he has not scored at all since the beginning of November. He doesn't offer as many goals as people think. He's got 6 overall this season, and he hasn't scored since that Chelsea game. So, he's not our top scorer anymore. Hoyland is now top scorer. So, he's not getting as many goals as what people think he is, and that's just the point I'm looking to make. And look at the opportunities he missed against Wigan, the opportunities he missed yesterday. He had a shot from outside the area yesterday as well. It went wide of the post. And when he's not scoring, he's offering absolutely nothing. So I wouldn't have brought him on at all. I would have brought on the quality of Casemiro, who can not only score from open play, but from, he's a threat from set pieces as well.
Would have offered much better balance in the middle of the park as well. Like you say, Carl, he doesn't really offer anything in midfield, Scotty. He's the kind of player that you bring on late on just to throw another body in the box because he can get a goal.
Yeah, but those goals have been few and far between in the last 3 months. He's still riding high on his late substitute appearance against Brentford, where he got
definitely, because I think that's the thing as well. When you score a late winner like he did, like, it lives long in the memory, doesn't it? So that's what people think back to. And that chance that you mentioned where he was wide of the post, I thought he actually snatched at it. I thought if he had looked around, he had options as well to pass it out wide and to do other things with it.
Yeah, and then the header at the end was fucking dreadful. It really didn't. You get underneath it, and when any good, you know, header of the ball would have buried that. You hit it down and into the corner, but he didn't. Obviously, he didn't time his jump correctly, and it was a wasted chance. Fabulous cross from Garnacho, has to be said, who had possibly one of his more difficult afternoons, and I have to give praise to the Spurs left back, Udogi. I thought he did a brilliant job against Garnacho on the day. It was really tough for Garna against a fullback of that quality, wasn't it, Brush?
Very much so, yeah. He had him in his pocket most of the game. Very tough afternoon for him.
Yeah, and Spurs, like it's been mentioned already on the show, that probably missing the three best attacking players in Son, Kulusevski and Maddison, but they had their strongest defense available, and you know, at times it was tough for United. But Højlund, fantastic RVP-esque finish there right at the start of the game.
Such a great finish.
Yeah, and every goal he gets, we're so pleased for him, because he's had a difficult start to live at United and been under so much pressure, being our main man up top at such a young age. So that will do wonders for his confidence. But I thought he had a really good game overall. Possibly United's best player, because he obviously got the assist for Rashford's goal. And then, do you remember near the halfway line, he absolutely skint one of their defenders. And it was a bit like the goal that he got against Galatasaray, the way he created the chance himself. But I think on this occasion, he tried to provide for someone. But yeah, it was lovely skill to take out the right back on the halfway line and create a chance. So yeah, I think probably the best game he's had for United, I would say, since Galatasaray at home. Would you go along with that, Hanif?
I thought it was decent. I think for him personally, it's obviously a confidence boost where he's making an impact as a forward, and that's what you want from Højlund, because he's playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world. And I just feel for him, because I watched him the other night against Wigan, and he should have had at least a couple. And I just thought, hopefully he'll score today, because it's just good for his confidence. And I think the midfield is not helping him whatsoever. Mino, Fernandez, they need to do more to support this lad. There was some good link up with him and Rashford. And look, he took his chance and he smashed it and buried it, and just made people aware that, you know what, he can do this, but he's going to need time. In terms of United's best player, I don't know how to measure that. To be fair, he was a bright spark. I thought Rashford was decent. Thought he was decent. He made an impact on the game, and he could have done some more. I don't know who the best player was for Man United. To be fair, but yeah, we can give it to Højlund, because he's a young lad, scored a goal against a top six club. It's just I just don't think what Tottenham are doing is anything special. I really don't. I think most clubs can play that football. I just feel that they're more willing to take risks by going forward. Hence why they're always open defensively. You know, it's a ball over the top. And
we saw the naivety in that as well, didn't we, Hanif, earlier in the season when they played you guys?
Yeah. Yeah, you did. You have to ultimately be able to take your chances, don't you, Brush? And
because I thought that was insane, that game, when they were down to like 9 and still kept attacking.
Yeah, and the commentators were saying this is brave, and I thought this is stupid. But yeah.
Reminded me of Ian Holloway, how he used to play with Blackpool.
With Blackpool, yeah. I think ultimately that's what it comes down to with Big Ange. He does, you know, this Tottenham team, right? And I've seen the second half of many games. Honestly, it's end-to-end stuff sometimes, because they can't control a game. They've got to finish the game off in the first half. Sorry, Kyle.
Yeah, I just had a look at the stats regarding McTominay, just to make sure I'm not talking crap. So he scored on game week 9 against Sheffield United. We're now on game week 21, and the only game he has scored in that period is the two goals against Chelsea in the Premier League. I know he got one against Galatasaray away, but yeah. So in the last 11 matches, he scored in one game in the Premier League. So he's not having the impact that people think he is. But yeah, I'm thinking, is it a coaching issue with United? Because Gary Neville was bringing it up on his podcast that there's no patterns of play with this United team. He said when he was playing that he knew when he received the ball who he was going to pass it to before he even received the ball. Now with this current United team, he thinks that they don't know who they're going to give it to next when they receive it. They have to think about it. And he thinks that Ten Hag needs to coach, you know, patterns of play with this United team. Otherwise, he's going to find himself out of a job. What's your views on that, Brush?
Yeah, most definitely. I agree with that statement. The only thing I will say is I think it's somewhat difficult when your first 11 isn't available. But even so, we should be expecting better than what we've seen. There's a distinct lack of ideas. I think what's really telling is the fact that only Burnley, Sheffield United and Crystal Palace have scored less goals than us in the league this season. We're also the only side in the top 10 with a minus goal difference.
Yeah, that's appalling. Minus five, yeah, at this stage of the season for Manchester United is quite incredible, really. We've really, really struggled to score goals. So I think we've now scored... we scored 24 now and conceded 29.
Yep.
It's a very, very low tally in terms of goals. It was rare yesterday getting two goals from forwards. So Marcus Rashford scored and got a kind of an assist. You know, from looking at the replay, it was actually a tackle that led to the ball falling to Hoyland and not a back heel as we initially thought from Rashford. But I think Hanif alluded to it earlier that he had some good moments and some bad moments. One particularly frustrating moment that stood out for me was when Rashford, he had an opportunity to shoot with his left foot inside the box, and he seen the defender, you know, dive in and decided to turn back onto his right foot. And before we knew it, there was about seven or eight Spurs defenders back, and the chance was gone. Rashford can be so frustrating at times. But it was probably one of his better games yesterday. As I said, I wouldn't have taken him off for Anthony. I can understand his frustration. You could see him, how unhappy he was sitting down on the steps. His celebration was interesting. That was talked about by the pundits in the studio afterwards. Now he since confirmed that this gesture that he was doing was about the criticism that he received midweek because he sent a message under Sancho's post about, I think Sancho said it's good to be back on the training pitch again with Dortmund, and Rashford said yes sir with like a love heart or something, and some people interpreted that as him supporting Sancho over Ten Hag, which is, you know, not necessarily the case. But so I think that's what Rashford was referring to. Now, initially we thought, and Keane thought this as well, and Redknapp, that is Rashford making reference to, you know, the criticism that he's got for his own performances all season? And you're like, how can he be that immune to criticism? Because he's deserved it, because he's been very poor all season. He's only got four goals. But it seems like he's clarified online that it was a reference to the message that he sent to Sancho, and not, you know, a reference to his critics about his own form this season. So, but I'm not a fan of players who are, you know, like Maguire did it a couple of years ago when he scored for England against Albania and he was cupping his ears. I'm not a fan of players doing that when they've been so out of form and then they score one goal and then they're like shush to the critics. I'm really not in favour of that, because it kind of indicates that they feel as if the criticism was unjustified when it was. You know, what's your thoughts on that, Hanif?
I think professional footballers need to understand that when you're making a truckload of money and you are multimillionaires and fans have expectations of hard work from you that you deliver, especially when you play for a club with the stature of Manchester United, this is not only for them, it's a job, and I get that. But to the person that's paying their wages, the fans, it's more to that. It's pride to them. And footballers are watched a lot, and I think they don't really have much of a personal life. But he could have just texted Sancho. When you do something right on Instagram and stuff like that, surely footballers are aware that all their accounts are being watched by the media. Anybody or anyone will be watching what they say, how they say, and who they're saying it to, and who they're referring to. And then the media will just link it to the ongoing issues between Sancho and Ten Hag and the club and the issues. So I think Rashford just needs to use his brain a little bit and just think, you know what, do I really need to do this? And if you do this, oh well, just crack on and just don't pay any attention to the media. That's one thing you have to do, and the best way to do it is to perform for Manchester United. If he performed half as good as he did last season, he'd be, I don't think many people would be questioning Rashford. The problem is United have done something which they should not have done. They should have told him, go another season, let's see if you can, you know, get us that many goals that he did last season. But they've rewarded him for a one season stint where he had, in my opinion, the season of his life, the season of his career, which I don't think he's going to probably get again. And they've rewarded him so heavily that now the eyes are always on him because he's on the big books. You know, Rashford's 26, 27 years old now. He's not a young kid. He shouldn't be getting that Jesse Lingard treatment where everyone thought Jesse Lingard was 21. The problem with Rashford is there's a lot of holes in his game which he needs to improve. And look, he had Cristiano there for a while. He could have spoken to Cristiano, said, "Listen, what did you do when you were doing this?" We knew what Cristiano was doing. He's working his socks off every day. But you know, he has to improve himself. And I think there is a player there. However, you know, there is that old proverb, you know, a leopard doesn't change its spots. So can Rashford improve as a player? I think his goal tally can. But he needs to make better decisions when he's on the ball. And I think it frustrates Man United because you just think you're one-on-one. Why can't you take that player on? Because he doesn't have the ability to, unfortunately. He needs space and grass to run onto because he can't really take a player on like Martinelli, for example. So I think Rashford just needs to concentrate on his own game and just get back to scoring form and winning games for Manchester United. You know, United are now just playing once a week and the odd FA Cup game. So yeah. I think he should be able to turn it around, but he has to commit himself.
I seen him yesterday pre-match with two earrings in, and I was thinking to myself, God, he behaves like Ronaldo in every way except the goals. He doesn't.
He's like Ronaldo, all apart from the one aspect where we need him to act like Ronaldo on the pitch.
And as the Mansecutioner says in the comments here, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth when players do that. Silencing the haters only works when you're performing well, and it makes you look completely out of touch with reality when you act that way. You know, it makes you look like a narcissist. But in Rashford's defence, and on the positive side of things, in the last four games, he has contributed a goal or an assist in the last four games. So he's starting to build up a wee bit of form now, and hopefully he can continue that to the end of the season.
Yeah, I do understand both sides of the argument, though, Carl. Like, I mean, you know, as much as we say these guys are on big bucks and they need to remain professional, they are human beings. And in this day and age, as much as I despise it and wish that they would stay off socials, it is a social media era. You know, these kids are on there, you know, tweeting and posting everything about their lives. And it's very difficult for them to sort of not do it in the public eye, I guess. So, yeah, it's probably like a sign of relief as well when they like eventually score or do something. But yeah, absolutely. It doesn't take away from the criticism as well. And also just scoring one goal or having the odd decent performance doesn't take away from 10, 15 games of trash, you know? So yeah. I also see it from the point of view of the fans that look and say, well, you can't really silence the critics in one performance. We need to see this on a consistent basis. But the problem with Rashford, though, is the things that we've been saying for donkey's years. So at 26, I just think he's a limited player. You have to accept Rashford for what he is. We keep thinking he can improve certain things. I don't think he can. The decision making has been atrocious for years now. The only thing you can do with Marcus Rashford is play to his strengths, accept his weaknesses, and there is a way in which to get the best out of him. If you play counter-attacking football, you know, if he doesn't have too much time to think on the ball, you get the best out of him. But if you don't cater to that, then you're going to see what we've been seeing.
Yeah, and he's very much a poor man's Mbappe, and maybe I'm even being a bit kind by saying that, but yeah, I think another issue with these footballers is that they're probably surrounded by sycophants, which is why they don't like criticism whenever it comes their way. But yeah, anyway, we'll move on now. So we have to give credit to Spurs because they looked like the team that were fifth in the league and we looked like the team that was ninth, and they totally dominated possession at the majority of the chances. I couldn't even watch the set pieces anymore. Every time they had a corner, I had to turn my back or close my eyes because it was becoming a farce. Carlson should never have got a free header there. He had about two men marking him, and there was tons of United defenders within his vicinity, and he was easily able to jump and just head that ball into the corner unchallenged somehow. And then I think it was Christian Romero who had a header from a similar position that hit the crossbar. And it led me to once again think about Eric Ramsey, the set pieces coach at United for the last 2.5 years, and wonder what the hell does he do on a weekly basis with this team. Because we must be the poorest team in the league when it comes to defending set pieces and when it comes to scoring from set pieces. What are your thoughts on it, Brush?
I noticed that at the mention of Eric Ramsey, Henny turned his camera off. We need to ask him some questions because obviously it's from Chelsea where we got him. Our set pieces have been terrible for a long, long time. I was really disappointed by the manner in which we conceded both goals. Like you say, for the first one, should have done a better job of picking up Richarlison. The second one, you know, whatever half-time team talk Ten Hag gave, it all goes out the window the moment we concede the way we did. And defensively, just the culmination of errors there. Johnny Evans. To be fair to Johnny Evans, he's 35. He shouldn't be put in that position, you know? It's hard for me to criticise. I do think he was at fault for the second goal. But at the same time, I don't think we should have him in that position at 35.
Yeah, I think it was a catalogue of errors for the second goal.
There was a whole bunch of people.
Eriksen didn't track the run with Bentancur. Then Johnny Evans looked well off the pace when Bentancur went past him. And Onana seemed to move his head out of the way of the ball as well. That's 51 goals now he's conceded, and we're only in mid-January. He's off now to AFCON. I believe he's had difficulty getting to the game tonight because his flying conditions. He's had to land, 150 miles away and then get a car to the stadium. It looks finally Bienda is going to get a chance, and we're going to see what he's all about in the FA Cup fourth round match. But Onana's not had a great start to life at Manchester United, and I think a lot of the fans are hoping that Bienda is going to be the saviour, but that's asking a lot.
I'm not going to hold my breath on that one.
Yeah, big time. The Mosquitioner says, we are 16th in the league in terms of goals via headers. I'm confused about why we are so bad in aerial battles, both offensively and defensively. But what I noticed last season and the beginning of this season is that Casemiro tends to score a lot of headers. Other than that, there's nobody else who seems to attack the ball. And obviously, the quality of the delivery is obviously an issue as well. But the defending from set pieces is like watching an amateur league team. I just can't understand it. That they work on this all week and it doesn't seem to improve. I thought it was quite interesting yesterday also that Wan-Bissaka played at left back for the first time in his career. Now, I believe it's because Ten Hag had worked on the training ground with an 11 all week that included Luke Shaw at left back. And he didn't want, obviously, Shaw had to pull out very late on. And Wan-Bissaka was told on the morning of the game that he was playing. And obviously, whatever plan that Ten Hag had, it involved Dalot playing right back. So he didn't want to tinker with that. So he brought Wan-Bissaka in at left back. But he looked, he won a lot of tackles, as he often does, but he looked quite awkward in that position when he was in possession. Did you notice that, Brush?
Listen, he looks awkward for me at right back, let alone left back.
Yeah, and I just want to command a bit of transfer speculation. Now, it's believed that United are interested in Michael Olyse from Crystal Palace, And Mark Ogden was writing this morning that United are going to explore the possibility in the summer of doing a part exchange with Crystal Palace and sending Michael Olyse and sending Wan-Bissaka back to Selhurst Park as part exchange. Do you think that'd be a good deal, Hanif and Brush? I'll come to you first, Hanif.
100%. Olyse is a baller. He's a really good player. I'm not, but the thing is this, it's okay playing well for Crystal Palace because we don't see the mistakes he made. They're not highlighted. But when you come to Man United, every time you take a step, that's highlighted. So if you're saying to me, is it a sign that Manchester United should make 100%? Yes. Problem is he's going to be big money, you know. He's not going to be cheap. I would not be surprised if Palace asked for 70, 80 million because he is one of their prized assets. I don't know the length of his contract and so on, but, you know, Palace are going to want big money for that.
I think he signed a new contract just last summer, Hanif, because last summer he did have like a 35 million release clause, it was believed. I think you guys tried to sign him and then he signed a new deal. So, yeah, it would probably cost north of 60, 70 million to get him now.
And, yeah, I mean,
you have to remember there'll be a bidding war, won't there? So,
any quality player that you want to buy from a fellow Premier League club, I mean, they're going to charge you big money because the wealth of the Premier League these days means that clubs don't have to sell. So they want, for any quality forward like that, they'll want north of 70 million.
And the trouble is, and I think one of the key things that Hanif mentioned there regarding Olyse, obviously it's different when you're at Palace. The expectations are different. And having seen him, there's no doubting his quality. But I have seen his head drop in games where he's completely has looked disinterested. And, you know, at United, can we really afford another one of those kind of characters? Another one that comes in for 60, 70 million? I think we need to sort out in-house stuff first. We need to sort out the futures of the likes of Sancho and Anthony and, you know, make decisions before we commit to another big money signing. And as much as we like to criticise Wan-Bissaka, would he be the first of the fullbacks I get rid of? Probably not.
I think you should do everything you can to keep Wan-Bissaka as long as I don't know how long his contract is, but keep him until the end of his contract because I think he's a really good player and he's improved since he's arrived at United.
Defensively, he's quite solid, isn't he? Like, I understand that.
Well, defensively, he's the best.
Yeah, defensively, I understand that we need someone more attacking. But if we get rid of him and we're just left with Dalot,
I'll be honest with you, Brush. I think obviously if the team's not playing well, and if the confidence of the team's not that great, what are you expecting from a guy who's, you know, he's not that confident in going forward? Because there was a time where he was making runs forward and he actually goes forward and he has a goal. And I just think, you know what? You're having a go and defensively you're one of the best. So I'll be honest with you. I would be shocked if that's your first priority. I really would be.
Yeah,
unless
same.
Obviously you have to look, your striker is your, I hate to say it, but your striker is your main, for me, your striker and your midfield is your main priority and then go for the wingers. I do think, and I know he gets a lot of stick, right? And I think it's because his personal problems this season that have really made his life a living hell this season. I do think Anthony's a decent winger. I just think it's his personal problems. He should not be playing football. His head's not in the game. And he's just trying to get... I think he's using football to try and escape from reality.
And the manager loves him. I don't think he's as bad as... You know,
yeah, I don't think he's, as bad as what people make him out to be. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Hanif. How about we sell Anthony to Chelsea? If you're obviously happy with the player, I'm not a fan.
You want
to
swap? You want to swap, Kyle? Who do you want to swap?
I'll take Sterling.
You know what?
It's a shame about his age, actually. If he was a couple of years younger, he would have been perfect.
Yeah, if there's one Chelsea player I'll take, it'll be Cole Palmer. What a talent he is.
Yeah, he's been the one bright spark in your season so far, Henny.
He's been good this season. I'm not going to lie to you. if you heard me after the Middlesbrough game, I was giving him a lot of stick. I don't care who you are, you got to turn up every game for me. But he's been one of our best players this season. And if Gareth Southgate makes the right decision, he's going to have a bright star in the summer playing for England. But I
yeah, Gareth Southgate and right decisions aren't things that go together.
I'm hoping Marcus Rashford makes the plane over called Palmer. I'm not going to lie, for my own selfish reasons. But yeah, you know, I think we're doing okay. You know, I predicted us to be 7th or 8th, and we are where I think we're going to be. So listen, I'm not stressing like United fans are. I'm pretty happy. I spoke to KG this afternoon and I said, lower your expectations, young man, because you know what? It's going to be a rocky ride until the end of the season.
Yeah, so another positive from yesterday was the return of Lisandro Martinez. The crowd gave him a huge standing ovation when he came on. Johnny Evans has done really good for the most part in the last few months, but there's no doubt that Martinez is going to be a step up in quality at the back. Brush, are you excited to see the return of Legion?
Oh, absolutely. Been waiting on this one. The only thing is I need us to make sure that we take our time this time around, because the last time he came back, I just felt that we rushed him back, you know, and he never looked really fully fit. So this time around, I hope we do it right, even if it takes a little bit longer. But yeah, we absolutely need him back.
Yeah, and this game against Eastleigh or Newport is going to be perfect for Martinez and Casemiro to get minutes under their belt. You couldn't have asked for a nicer fixture. Now that I've said that, we'll get knocked out by non-league Eastleigh. Yeah, the FA Cup is working out nicely for us at the moment in terms of the draw. We want to avoid Liverpool and Man City as long as possible.
Ideally, in the next round, if that could be the fixture that's drawn, that would be great. If Liverpool can draw Man City in the next round.
Yeah, but you know, Spurs are at home to City in the fourth round. You know, he wouldn't put it past Tottenham. But then again, Kevin De Bruyne is back and Haaland is on the way back.
Bloody hell, the impact De Bruyne made. Oh.
Yeah, the goal was one thing, but the assist was out of this world. Yeah, I think they're just going to blow everyone
away. And what a finish by the young lad as well, Oscar Bob. Oh.
Yeah, brilliant. I think Liverpool's title hopes are going to go down the Swanee once Man City put a 10-game winning run together, like they always do. We're not going to be complaining about that at Old Trafford too much. We'll always take a Man City title win over a Liverpool title win any year.
I mean, listen, I'm looking at the table right now, Carl. I'm hoping it's going to be one of those Leicester City type seasons for Aston Villa.
But we ruined that ourselves. We set them back on Boxing Day we got an unexpected win against Aston Villa. I was hoping they might.
And I had a feeling as well this weekend they would fumble the bag against Everton. I just, anytime they're close to the top of the table, I don't know if it's a psychological thing, they just can't get it over the line.
Yeah, and they just about beat Burnley at home as well.
Yeah.
Over Christmas, they've had a bit of a sticky patch. It was always going to be difficult for them because they don't have the squad that the other teams have.
But, no, they don't. And then I thought it was quite funny as well that Spurs are now level with Arsenal. I know they've played a game more, but you know, after all the hype around Arsenal in the early part of the season.
That's another thing I wanted to mention, and Roy Keane was talking about this. I noticed it under Redknapp. I noticed it under Pochettino, and now it's happening under Ange Postecoglou. Never has a team got so much praise for winning so little. So even they've drawn against a United team which they should have beaten, they lost 4-1 at home to Chelsea, like we've talked about, and yet they came out of both of those games getting so much praise from the media and the pundits, and you're like, it's all about winning. And the high line with 9 men against Chelsea was suicidal. Yesterday they should have beaten a very, very poor United team at Old Trafford, and yet you drew, and they're still coming out with it with a lot of praise. What's your thoughts on that, Hanif?
Listen, they are the media team, aren't they? They are the team that everyone loves because they have, unfortunately, not achieved anything since 2009. So 15 years or so. So when you've not won anything since that, and you made a Champions League final, and I think they finished second or third once under Pochettino.
Third. No, they finished third in a two-horse race.
They finished third. Yeah, so, you know, they've always been that team of what-ifs. And I'll be honest with you, I always let Spurs do their thing because, you know what, when it comes to the crunch, when it comes to getting over the line, there's only a few clubs that have achieved that. And until they don't achieve it, there's serious... I don't consider them a threat. I really don't. Because if they were serious, right, they would have done what West Ham did last season. Take that trophy serious or take the trophy that they're in, like the League Cup, any trophy you want. Take it serious and go and win it for your fans. Achieve some level of success. Feel what success is. Because obviously we support clubs that have been successful, whereas Spurs have never been successful for the past 15 years. Most of their fans have probably not seen a trophy, especially their young fans anyway. And then you've got, you know, they've got famous YouTubers and so forth. But I'll be honest with you, I just don't see them as a success. I always see them finishing between third and eighth. That's Spurs. They'll always be there or thereabouts. But will they win the league title? No chance. No chance whatsoever. No, I don't think they'll win the league title for the next 5 years, personally.
Next 50 years, probably.
I think this is probably maybe why they get praised so much in the media, because anytime they're sort of fifth and above, like, nobody expects them to be there.
Yeah, ironically, in the last 30 years, the two trophies that they have won, which is two League Cups, have come under their least popular managers, George Graham, who was an Arsenal man, and Wande Ramos, who the fans didn't like very much. So with all the praise has come under Redknapp, Pochettino and Postecoglou, and they haven't won anything to date.
Wande Ramos is a legend, Kyle. He's a legend. You can't speak about their legend that way. He's a legend.
He might be in Spain, but I don't think Spurs fans see it that way. Brush, I'm going to ask you to, I do this most of the time, but on this occasion, I'm going to ask you to do some of the player ratings from yesterday. So the goalkeeper, Andre Onana, Brush, what does he get out of 10?
What's the base for turning up?
A six?
Yeah, that's what you get.
Diogo Dalot?
I thought Dalot did all right, actually. I don't think he did too badly, but again, nothing exceptional, man. Yeah, a lot of average performance is what I saw out of it. So, yeah, again, a 5 or 6.
Yeah, I thought Dalot won a lot of tackles, which was unusual for him. But then there was a few awful defensive moments where he was ball watching. They had an opportunity at the back post. It was headed across goal. I think Johnny Evans got an intervention on it to stop it going in and out for a corner. But the marking from Dalot was shocking. So there was the good, bad and the ugly from Dalot yesterday.
Yeah, I thought it was collective though, Carl. I thought all of them, you know, defensively, didn't really cover themselves in glory.
Yeah, I thought Evans is very poor for the second goal. What would you give him out of 10?
Yeah, see, with that one, it's harsh for me to judge him because, I don't think he should be there. I think we're setting him up to fail. Like, at 35, what am I expecting from Johnny Evans in that situation? You know,
36 now? He just had 36, a birthday
36 now, flipping it. Yeah, what am I expecting from him? He shouldn't be there. That's exactly what I would expect to happen to someone of his age. But, yeah, poor. So, what, 5?
Rafa Varane.
Again, with Varane, I think he is the leader at the back, isn't he? With the experience as well, I think he should have done better.
Do you think he should have done better for the Richarlison goal, Varane? I know he wasn't charged with marking Richarlison. Bizarrely, it looked like Wan-Bissaka and Manu were marking Romero and Richarlison. Whoever came up with that is insane. But do you think Varane maybe should have dominated more there?
Definitely, that's the kind of place in which I expect his experience to come through, and he was just another passenger, unfortunately.
Yeah, and Wan-Bissaka in his first ever game at left back.
I mean, yeah, it's difficult to judge him, isn't it? Because obviously he's playing out of position, and that, like you mentioned, he did make a fair few tackles, but that's what we know he can provide. Outside of that, he looks a bit shaky for me.
And the midfield were very average as well, weren't they? What about Manu and Eriksen?
I thought Manu was all right. With him, though, I just feel that he hasn't got any support. So he's always just overrun there. He's just, you know, doing the job of two men, really.
Yeah, and he's not the quickest.
No, no. And people forget, like, obviously he's mature beyond his years, but at the same time, he is young. He's going to make mistakes and he needs support. And it's criminal that we're not offering him support. Why was Casemiro not there next to him?
Yeah, he didn't come on at all yesterday. I mean,
no.
if he wasn't fit enough to make a sub appearance, then he shouldn't be on the bench. But from here on in, I want to see Casemiro and Manu together, because like you said earlier.
Yeah, because I feared that even if Cas did come on, Ten Hag probably would have brought him on for Manu instead of alongside him.
Yeah, probably. But in my opinion, them two together would bring balance to the midfield.
Definitely. Definitely. It would solidify that midfield.
And Eriksen, again yesterday, by half-time, he looks knackered.
The legs have gone. Legs have totally gone. I'm sure he's great to have around in the dressing room and the experience he brings, but yeah.
Yeah. Casemiro probably should have replaced him at half-time. If it was me making the decision, that's what I would have done. Because Eriksen can only play 45 minutes and Casemiro just come back from injury. So to me, that would a half each would have made sense to me, but that didn't happen. So did you give Eriksen a mark? I can't remember.
No, I did. Average six.
I would say five.
Five.
Bruno Fernandes, definitely not one of his better days, I have to admit. Yeah, he didn't. I think he was involved in the first goal, to be fair to him. It was a lovely ball played in that move. I think it was the first goal. Yeah,
but indifferent performance by Bruno Fernandes. With him and Rashford and that, I think a lot of it goes down to the coaching, you know, and the manager and how you set up. There's a certain way you've got to play to get the best out of those players. Otherwise, they're just passengers.
Yeah, and I've seen a stat that was it last season. He had covered the most miles out of any player in the Premier League. So 21,000 kilometres or something. And somebody joked saying, I spent about 19,000 of those chasing referees. it was not one of his better days yesterday. And still question marks over whether he should be captain or not, because he's too whiny for me to be captain. I don't think he's...
Personally, for me, it's got to be Martinez, but, you know, that's a conversation for later down the line.
Yeah, I think that will happen in time. But, yeah, Bruno would get a five from me yesterday. So, Alejandro Garnacho, a tough day against a really good left-back, Brush. So, his best moment probably came at the very end with the cross for McTominay, but other than that, it was...
Yeah, a very frustrating afternoon for him. So, again, quite average. I'll give him a six.
And Marcus Rashford?
Oh, I think a seven's too high a praise. Maybe a 6.5? Because
what I noticed,
I thought he took his goal well, but there was other elements of his game that were just as frustrating. As they always are.
Yeah, frustrating. I mean, if he was at his best like he was last season.
Yeah.
Rashford could have had three goals yesterday.
Definitely.
He's not at that level at the moment. And you know, as Hanif said earlier, he might never get back to that level. It might have just been a freak season.
Yeah.
But let's see. So
I think you don't have to play to his strengths though. That's the most important thing, because the chances of him improving technically are very slim. That's unless he has to like spend a couple of summers off season to improve as a player, and not many players are willing.
We're talking about like the 1% of players who have that kind of determination. You know, unless you're a Cristiano Ronaldo or a Zlatan, you're not going to put in that kind of hours to adjust your game.
And he's another one who's had issues off the field. So And you know, the sad thing is we hear about this, but that should not matter, because there were other, when Man United were great, a lot of the other players, a lot of the great players had issues off the field, but when it came to getting the job done, they got the job done. And that's where this generation, unfortunately, have not got it right.
Another thing I noticed yesterday is that Garnacho was being heavily marked. It was the left back's job to mark him, but he was being double marked at times and even triple marked. They're definitely cutting out the space for him. But that led to Rashford getting more space because so much attention was on Garnacho. And that's why a lot of our chances came through Rashford, because I think they were affording more space. The Spurs obviously identified Garnacho as more of a threat, and it obviously gave Garnacho more space to cause problems. It was just something that I noticed. Rasmus Højlund, definitely one of his better games at Manchester United. Fabulous RVP style goal. And he's now got 7 for the season as United's top scorer. Now, we've had to wait till the 14th of January for our striker to be our top goal scorer, but we're finally here, and hopefully he can finish the season, maybe with 15 goals. Brush, what would you give him out of 10?
7 for him. I thought he was probably one real bright spark. Like Hadeef said, though, I do think he needs to offer a bit more. He quietened down as the game went on. But again, it's not just his fault. Like, you need to look at the service and those around him.
So the two substitutes that played more than 6 minutes were McTominay and Martinez. So McTominay, I think his score is going to be very low. He's only there to score a goal. He had 2 opportunities to do so and he didn't. So I would give him a 4, to be honest with you. And Martinez, he looked really good. He's always brilliant on the ball. He allows United, his defensive line, to push up more and get higher up the pitch. And he starts a lot of attacks with his distribution. His crossfield balls are fantastic. But there was times where he looked a wee bit off the pace, and that's not a surprise.
It is to be expected with how long he's been out for, really.
Yeah, so we have to give him a bye ball on that one. But I would give him a 6, in the circumstances. He's a wonderful footballer. And you have to be, if you're going to be a 5'9" centre-half, you have to be a hell of a player, and he is. We've all been critics of Ten Hag's transfer policy of bringing in players that have played in the Eredivisie. But nobody's complaining about, Lisandro Martinez coming to the club. And I think he will outlast Ten Hag by quite a number of years at Manchester United, and probably will be captain one day, like we've alluded to already. I give him a 6. And Anthony, he only played a few minutes, and Rashford was absolutely furious, wasn't he, when Anthony came on for him. Now, if he had to make a substitution, I would have brought on Palestri for Garnacho, given it wasn't Garnacho's best day.
Yeah.
But he always knew that if he was going to make an attacking sub, it was going to be his love child, Anthony. But he took, even when he made that substitution, which was controversial in itself, even bringing Anthony on at all, but taking off Rashford, I really didn't understand that. And it was nobody's going to have an impact anyway when you bring them on after 88 minutes. I don't understand these substitutions are often baffling.
It's time wasting, though, isn't it, Kyle? I think that's what a lot of these managers do, don't they? It's just to waste time, because I think Erik ten Hag was probably happy with a point, and I think that's and then obviously it just depends. I think when you saw Rashford, I think he was tired, and I think it was the right time to take him off. I think the problem is because he brought Anthony on, and obviously Anthony's reputation at the moment is not great amongst the United fans. I think main issue here.
That's another occasion this season where the home fans at Old Trafford have booed a substitution made by the manager. There's been occasions where in home matches where the crowd have been very unhappy with Rashford, but yesterday they were unhappy with him being substituted, you know, for Anthony. Ten Hag doesn't seem bothered one bit by the crowd booing his substitutions, but I can see why they're doing it. That's another thing I want to mention from yesterday, is that according to a number of accounts of people who were at the game, it was one of the poorest atmospheres at Old Trafford in recent times, from the home end and the away end. Only the atmosphere was dull, to say the least. And even people that are part of the singing section at Old Trafford were very, very disappointed with the atmosphere yesterday. Can you think of any particular reason for that, Brush?
I mean, generally speaking, it's been quite negative of late, with the amount of defeats and how we're doing. But yeah, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it at the moment. Yeah, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
And
there's
so
many things up in the air, isn't there?
I know it's been a poor season, but generally United fans in the ground anyway, you know, especially the away United fans, they tend to be quite positive and they're always singing and getting behind the team. But yesterday I was, you know, I read accounts from a number of people who say the atmosphere was shocking yesterday. Yeah, maybe the depression has set in finally after all these defeats this season. Yeah, it was disappointing, I suppose, that it's come to this. So, United now, where are we in the table? Let me take a look.
Seventh, I think.
Yeah, I think we started ninth yesterday. Yep. And now we're up to seventh with the point. It's obviously very tight there.
But we could drop down again if Brighton win their game.
Yeah. 10 teams played. Yeah, 10 teams played this weekend and then 10 teams play next weekend. And everybody gets a bit of a break, providing that you're not in the League Cup semi-finals or in an FA Cup replay. Then you will get 2 weeks off at some point in January. But yeah, Chelsea are down to ninth as it stands, and Brighton 8th, and United 7th, West Ham 6th, and Spurs 5th. Spurs, as you said, level on points with Arsenal now. Yeah, it's very tight there. Newcastle 2 points further back from Chelsea. And even at one point on Saturday night, Newcastle were way up to 7th, but then De Bruyne comes on and Newcastle are down to 10th. So yeah, it's very congested there, in and around the Europa Conference League spot and just below it. It's going to be four teams fighting it out for that Conference League spot, it seems, guys. And Chelsea and United are among them.
Yeah, competition is so rife in our league. Like, there's not much separating any of the teams, are there, really? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Listen, look. My expectations were lowered 2 seasons ago. So, you guys, I hate to say this, but let me ask you, Kyle, what were you expecting from yesterday's game before the ball was kicked? What were you, apart from a win, what were you expecting against Spurs?
Truthfully, I'm usually quite negative as a United fan, as most people who follow me on social media and YouTube will know. But I actually thought United would win 3-2 yesterday. Because we had the likes of Casemiro, Martinez, Eriksen, and Shaw supposedly coming back, and Spurs were missing the three best attacking players in Son, Kulusevski, and Maddison. And I noticed that Postecoglou's played quite a high line this season. I thought, we've got the players to hurt them on the counter-attack, play the ball over the top, and we will get chances in behind with the Garnacho, Hoyland, and Rashford's pace. And I thought that they would have the majority of the possession, but we would win the game 3-2. We've done a lot against the top teams at home where we've won games.
Were you surprised when you saw the team sheet and saw that they had their first choice centre-back pairing back?
Yeah, I think it heard that. I watched the Spurs team news bulletin and I was aware that this was going to happen. And I thought, yeah, it's going to be difficult to score against them, given they've got their first choice, centre back pairing there. But you know, Hoyland scored after 3 minutes. I thought, yeah, this is going really well so far. But then the old disease of being unable to defend set pieces struck again. But yeah, I thought United would yesterday pretty much went the way I thought it would, apart from United not getting the winning goal. But I suppose there's an element of it being
tough. And then we would have been sitting here in it, Carl, saying, well, we got away with one.
Yeah.
We got the 3 points, that's the important thing, but it wasn't convincing, you know. How many times have we said stuff like that?
The reason why I asked Kyle Ambrose was when Ten Hag first initially came in, I thought you would have this season, last season, if that makes sense. And I thought you would have had last season, this season. But it actually happened the other way around. And you know when, and I've seen this, and it's happened to us as well, where whenever a new manager comes in or new players come in and they give us a new lease of life and they show us a bit of ambition and think, and then we get that hope. But the problem is I really think that we don't give managers enough time where, and this is just me, I don't know much about Ten Hag. I'm just looking at it from the outside in, and you know, we've got Mauricio Pochettino. I'm willing to give my manager his contract, and whatever Ten Hag's contract is, I would give it to him unless your new owner has got a world-class manager. But the problem is all the our owners are pretty similar. They're going to be asked, they're going to ask new managers, you've got to work with what you've got and we'll get you one or two top-class players. And that's, for me, that's what worries. That's how I look at Manchester United. And I just think that give him, I would say if you don't have a good manager ready for next season, and I've seen some of the names linked with you guys, you really are following the Chelsea model, aren't you? I really think you should give Ten Hag another season. Don't give him control of transfers, but give him another season, because what I saw last year, I thought it was decent from Ten Hag, but I think you've had too many players come in, too many changes happening, especially to the likes of De Gea, which I personally thought that's just a silly move. You need to give him this season because he's part of the spine of the club. And then I would do it slowly. I'm willing to do what Arsenal did with Arteta. If Pochettino takes 4 years, I'll give him 4 years if he gets me into that top four or fighting for a European place or fighting for the league possibly. And I personally think that as football fans, we are not patient anymore because we support these clubs and we're so we're so vested in these clubs that we want to see great football and we want to see results. But unfortunately, it never works like that.
Yeah, and it does concern me that this January, it's been reported that Ten Hag is keeping tabs on Bran Brobby, the Ajax striker. Like,
No,
you cannot allow this man to keep signing players from Holland. Because
he's not a great striker either, Carl. I've seen him.
Who's that? Sorry, what was that name again? Sorry,
Brobby. He's at Ajax.
Yeah, Brand.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you, right? And this is me being honest. You know, when we signed Mudrick, I didn't know who that was, and I didn't know who Enzo Fernandez was until he played for Argentina, and I don't know who that guy for Ajax is as well. So Kyle, you're probably right there. You should personally speak to Ten Hag about that one.
Yeah, I just agree with what you were saying, that there's no way Ten Hag, if he remains beyond the season, there's no way he should have control of transfers. He can have a little bit of an input and, you know, have his veto, but there's no way that he should be making suggestions anymore. According to reports that I've read from reliable journalists, is that he even insisted on signing Sofyan Amrabat, and a lot of the scouts on the director of football were not in favour of signing this player. They seen too many holes in his game, but Ten Hag got his way and he's looked a very, very poor signing. Now, luckily, he's only on loan and we can send him back, albeit it was a 10 million euro loan fee.
Which is a big fee for a loan. It's a big fee for a loan. It's ridiculous.
I just
I'll be honest with you, Kyle. When you sign a player who plays, and this is what happens when we fall for those players that play international football. International football, right, in the summer or whenever it is completely different to Premier League ball. There's not been, I don't know if there's been many fantastic players that have turned international performances into top quality Premier League performances. And one of my friends who follows Portugal said, oh, Bruno smashed a hat-trick against this team. And I just said, well, if you speak to United fans, they'd like to see him smash a hat-trick now and again for them as well. But I said, it's international football. You can't measure a player to that, to the Premier League level by watching international football. Because, you know, when you play for your country, money doesn't matter. You're playing for passion, for pride, integrity and all that, for the people of your country. He looked amazing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to lie. Even Ziyech looked amazing, but I know what Ziyech's level is. So I think as fans, we need to be very wary of when we watch international football, especially fans that have been following clubs for a long time, because we know what the level is. So if we see someone doing really well at AFCON and they play for, I don't know, a country that we've never heard of before, I would be very wary. I'd be thinking, I'd do the same as United, a loan, but you guys pay, I can't believe Russia, you paid 10 million loan fee. Who did Madness. You pay that to?
It's what you guys did with João Felix last season.
Yeah. Yeah,
come on, Brush. Yeah. We thought he was a player, though. Come on, Brush. I bet you thought, so I was like, you know, let's see.
I didn't think it made sense unless you had the option to buy.
You did, Brush, but you don't want to know what money they asked.
Just to reinforce the point you were making there, Hanif, Bruno Fernandes got a hat trick of assists against Luxembourg. I mean, that doesn't mean anything to me.
I think he scored goals. I think, I'm sure he scored goals against one particular country. I'm sure he did.
He might have got a brace against one particular country, but I'm not sure if he scored a hat-trick. Yeah. But because I looked it up there, hat-trick Bruno Fernandes, Portugal, and he came up hat-trick of assists against Luxembourg. But it wasn't just the performances of Amrabat at the World Cup that caught Ten Hag's eye. Once again, he also managed him when he was manager of Utrecht about 10 years ago. So he always looks to players that he's worked with before. And this has not been a successful strategy at Manchester United. And this is why, even if Ten Hag stays, United need to move on from this transfer strategy. I know we've been linked with Dan Ashworth, the Newcastle director of football. We're looking to get him in, you know, in February and begin his work at overhauling the recruitment process and possibly Paul Mitchell alongside him. That would be amazing. The sooner the better for me, because we cannot, in this day and age, we cannot allow the manager to have total control of transfers, because it's been very
I think that's policy. Been one of the problems at Manchester United, though, hasn't it, Kyle? Because you've not had, I know you've changed these director of footballs internally from Fletcher to Woodward. I don't know who your director of football is, but if you don't have a footballing person in charge of the footballing operations, then this is what happens. Because I'm a pretty simple guy. And when I look at who clubs sign, surely there's say for example, United needed a forward in the summer and they didn't get Højlund. You should have had a list of five or six players and then thought, okay, how much is this player worth and what are we willing to pay up to? So Højlund is a fantastic talent. He's a 25, 30 million pound player. Okay, we'll give 35, but we're not paying more than that. We have to look elsewhere. And there are strikers in the market that can do a job. I know managers want certain players, and I know Ten Hag had that fantastic season, but this is where you need a guy with common... I don't believe there is any common sense at Chelsea and at Man United, but this is why you need a guy with a bit of common sense to listen. You want me to pay 60 million euros for this guy? He played for Atalanta and he scored 7 goals. You should have just gone in all out. And I said this to, I don't know if I said it to you, Kyle, and I think I said it to Brush. I said, go get Kane. Break the bank. He's worth every single penny. You break the bank for Kane or you get Osimhen. And I honestly don't understand why that didn't happen at Manchester United. Because if that was Fergie, that would have happened. What worries me.
We've had the Kane discussion, you know, several times in the last 6 months. You know, I'm trying not to talk about it anymore. But we went so high for Hoyland, £72 million. We were only about £20 million away from the fee that Bayern played for Kane then. So I don't understand why United decided in very early June that they weren't going to pursue Kane anymore. It didn't make any sense to me. And he would have wanted to stay in England. He would have went to United.
It's not about the player. It's about having the right person there in charge of footballing operations and saying, listen, are you being serious now? Stop taking the mic. Let's not be silly. Yeah. We are not spending 60. That's what I'm saying. We don't. You need that person there. And you know, this guy you've got coming in, right? Jim Radcliffe. You're hoping he's that guy. But you know, when he makes moves in the summer, we're going to see it. And you know what? It's not, when you're hearing things like Graham Potter, I'm like, this isn't right, you know? United fans are losing it. My mate, Wajid, he's a big United fan. He goes, this is disgusting. And I think this summer is going to be very telling to see which direction Man United go, because you know what? It's shocking to see United at this level. And that's coming from, you know, someone who doesn't support Man United, because Man United for me is the biggest club in England, but they're not acting like the biggest club in England. And it's not, and I just don't get it, honestly, mate. Maybe I'm speaking of bubbles, but I just don't get it.
The good thing is that Jim Radcliffe will not be making any football decisions himself. He'll be hiring the right people to do that, which the Glazers have failed to do in the last 18 years. Him and Brailsford have recognize that they need to have football people in football roles making football decisions, not bankers and accountants.
Who would have thought, eh?
Imagine that concept.
Yeah.
I just want to get to a couple of comments here. Monty Kuchner thinks that McTominay should only get a 3 out of 10 for yesterday because McTominay took the ball off Rasmus on one chance, did not pass to Garnacho on another, and shot it wide and missed an unmarked header. Can't disagree with that. And Simon Davies, he used to play for Wales and Tottenham, didn't he, Simon Davies? Fernandez half the time looks like a petulant child in Toys R Us for me, absolutely. He said there's one good thing that hasn't changed, and I can't believe you can't see it. Come on, dudes. Not sure what he's referring to. And he says Kane would have been sweet as sugar at United. He says Hanif is on the money. Good stuff, bro. I'm a Man City fan and I agree, dude. Thanks for your comments, Simon. Great to have you here as always. So Brush, I just wanted to ask you about the departures from Manchester United. There's been quite a few this month already. Hannibal Mabry has gone to Sevilla on loan and they have a €20 million buy option in the summer, and we have a €35 million buyback clause there as well. And Sancho has obviously gone to Dortmund. We're paying a large slice of his wages, and we've got, I think, only €3.5 million loan fee. He's got an assist already in his first appearance at Dortmund, which is unsurprisingly went viral on Saturday night. So what are your thoughts on those two departures, Bush?
All right, I'll start with Hannibal. I'm quite happy with that deal. This is the kind of business we should be doing. If you're not going to use young players, instead of them just sitting on the bench and rotting, I prefer we did stuff like this. He's got the perfect opportunity now to go and build a successful career at Sevilla. The buyback option also is nice. If he does well, then he can go there permanently, and then we've got the option to bring him back later down the line, and it works out for all parties. So I'm quite happy with that. Regarding Sancho, I think the return to Dortmund was probably the best thing for him at this moment in time. Hoping he can regain some confidence and some kind of form. Either for a return, or if we're looking to sell him on, we need that value to remain high. And that can only happen if he gets game time and whatnot. So, yeah, I think Dortmund at the moment is a good move for him. But again, that's something we're going to have to reassess in the summer. And it's dependent on a multitude of things. If the manager remains, or if we move in a different direction, it's probably best for all parties if we could cash in. But obviously, on 350 grand a week and whatnot, there's not going to be too many clubs out there that can afford him, unless you take a massive loss. Also, that's another thing Ineos will have to look at. I'm not sure they'll want to take a loss on a player who's 23.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to be willing to take losses to get people off the books that have been there too long, or who are not succeeding either. Yeah, I think the reason why United haven't put in, a clause where a fixed fee where Dortmund can buy him permanently is that they're waiting to see. They're hoping that his value goes up if he plays well at Dortmund.
Yeah.
And also, if United change their manager, then he might want to have Sancho.
Exactly. You need that bit of flexibility. And you don't want to get locked in as well with the fixed fee, because we've got Hanif here. Hanif will know about this. I think that happened with Chelsea when you guys loaned out and then had the option for Tomori to AC Milan. I don't think you guys expected him to do as well as he did. And had you waited, you probably could have got more money for Tomori than the 25 million got at the time.
Yeah, we saw a lot of promise in Tomori, and then when he went away, obviously we were all happy. I'm really happy when you know young players leave big clubs and they make careers for themselves. I get really happy about that, because I know. Obviously, you've got Hannibal and the others, but these lads, you're not going to make it at Chelsea or Man United. You're not going to make it here. You either go down to the bottom end of the Premier League or the Championship or abroad. And I always think abroad is a better option, because it's not as physical. And some leagues are more technically minded, like the Dutch League, like the German League. These are good leagues to develop young talent. And these are the places that they should go. I believe Zidane Iqbal's gone to Holland as well, if I'm not mistaken. And he's doing all right. Madsen's gone as well. He was another one. He was a winner to sit on the bench, and I respect that. Why should you suffer as a young player if you've got talent? If you are wanted somewhere and they're going to play you, you should go. You should get out. And I've always said this about young talent. And, I think the best example I can give is young players need to look at what Romelu Lukaku used to do when he was at Chelsea, when he was a young kid at 17. He went everywhere. He was all over the place, and then he made a career out of himself, and then he came back and did a Pogba to Chelsea, and now he's on loan. But that's what young players need to do. They need to get out and play.
Oh, another one, Carl. Alvaro Fernandez.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, he's a. It's a loan to Benfica, is it, with an option?
Yeah, is it? I think it's only 10 million they can buy him for in the summer, so it's
yeah, a, yeah. I would be a bit more comfortable if there was a buyback option on that one as well.
To me, he's possibly a better player than Malacia, so it's interesting that Ten Hag has written him off without giving him much of a chance.
Yeah,
but then
he's one that honestly he probably would have had the best chance of making it, even as a rotational option. So I was a bit surprised. I'm glad it's a loan though, and not a permanent straight off.
It's been a theme now under Ten Hag that he gets rid of youngsters without really giving them much of an opportunity. Obviously, Menu and Garnacho would be an exception to that, but by and large, he gets rid of people very, very quickly. Supposedly, it's his policy that if he doesn't feel you're good enough to start for the first team, then he's just going to let you go. And they're going for minimal fees. Zidane Iqbal is another one. James Garner. James Garner has done really well under Sean Dyche at Everton. Do you think maybe we got rid of him too quickly, Brush?
We definitely sold him for the wrong price. I was quite pissed off at the deal at the time. Because I remember at that time, Conor Gallagher came off of that wonderful season with Crystal Palace when he was quoted at like 35, 40 million. And I was thinking, James Garner's just come off on loan. Why don't we loan him to a Premier League club and see how he develops after a season? instead of cashing in early. The British, there's obviously an English tax on players as well, but that doesn't seem to apply to United when we do business.
Yeah, I mean, that was an awful deal. The Garner, James Garner went to Aberdeen for a very, very minimal fee, from what I remember.
Yeah. I think it was 15 in total, but 9 up front or something.
Had that have been Michael Edwards, had that have been Michael Edwards at Liverpool selling James Garner, he would have got £30 million for him. You think of some of the average players that Liverpool have sold to the likes of Bournemouth for big
things. The Jordan Ives of this world. We've seen Joe Willock go from Arsenal to Newcastle for about 25. But business, it all comes down to the lack of structure, doesn't it? It's the blind leading the blind at United. Ethan Laird as well, I was quite disappointed that he left a nominal fee as well.
Yeah, only twice have we made a profit since the Ed Woodward era began in 2013, and that's Daley Blind and Dan James
and Daley Blind.
We've been awful at selling players.
Yeah, shocking. Jesse Lingard, after that wonderful spell at West Ham, we should have cashed in on him.
Oh yeah, missed opportunity. And just last summer there, we should have cashed in on McTominay and Maguire. The only good thing is McTominay's value will still remain that high, I think, after the goals he's got this season. And Maguire has played well in a 3-month spell this season before he got injured, so his value might remain high. Although
credit to Maguire though, since he stayed, he has proved a reliable option this season when called upon.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be any more than a bench option if we're serious about winning the league.
But that's the thing though, Kyle, like with him, I don't think he's as bad as people make out. Like against the bottom half teams, he's going to do a job. It's when you get to the elite, that next level, I don't think he's capable to step up.
Yeah. On current form, I would get rid of Lindelof first. And I think it's inevitable that Varane's going to leave the club this summer, so I think Maguire might stay, you know. Guys, we will wrap it up there for today. It's been a pleasure as always, and been a very interesting podcast, you know, discussing a variety of topics.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks once again for coming on, Brush.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure.
And thank you to you, Hanif, for coming on and giving us your...
Anytime, Paul. Anytime. It's been amazing.
You're always here to give us your point of view from as a neutral and your point of view as a Chelsea fan. It's always interesting. You obviously disagree with us on certain things, like Anthony, for example. A lot of United fans don't like him, but you're a big fan. But
I'm not a big fan. I just think he shouldn't be playing this season because of his personal issues. That's all I'm saying. And I think because he's playing through them, it's showing in his performances. Because last season, I thought he was okay. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it wasn't a spectacular first season by any means. With his 8 goals and 3 assists or whatever it was, but certainly better than the player that we're seeing right now. I just think he's too one-dimensional for the Premier League.
I think that's what it is. And, you know, you can kind of compensate for that if you've got an overlapping fullback, but we don't really have one of those either.
And just finally, Matsukushner says here, I'm hoping this new board can do proper business with the academy seals. Not everyone will make it at United, and that is okay, but we need to get some value for these seals.
Absolutely. Have to stop this trend of people just leaving on frees. It's all about balancing the books.
Yeah, and these fees, like £1 million for a top talent.
Yeah. You know? So in comparison to that, I can already see a change. Like the deal for Hannibal looks a good one on paper.
Yeah, in an ideal world, he does well there.
Yeah.
Between now and May, and then we can get that €20 million for him and bank it. And Manzikushner also says here, hopefully these cheap seals show that the academy can produce players and give them a path to professional football, even if it is at a different club. Yeah. Most people won't make it in the first team. Only the absolute creme de la creme of talents will, like Garnacho and Manu, will make it into the first 11. Most people will be like Robbie Savage and have to go somewhere else to play their football.
Charlie. Well, yeah, well Robbie and they both started. Both of them. They both started at United.
Yeah, yeah, both of them. Yeah, I actually meant Robbie, but yeah, Charlie as well. Yeah,
yeah, because Charlie moved on, didn't he? So yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but one thing that Charlie managed to do that Robbie didn't was make his debut for Manchester United. Mm-hmm. I think it was against Young Boys under Ranić.
Yeah.
But Robbie never managed to do that. But look who he was competing against again to the first team.
I mean, he was class of 92. He came up within it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mad.
He was in serious company there. He was going to be a hell of a job for him to get into. You know, United's first team was brilliant in the early 90s.
Credit to Robbie. Robbie went on to have a solid Premier League career.
At Leicester, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and then Blackburn, I think. Blackburn, Birmingham.
Derby, yeah. Decent enough
Premier League. He probably wants to forget about Derby. I think that was the season they got the record lowest number of points in the Premier League.
Lads. So, yeah, thanks for coming on. Everyone, please smash a like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and get more of your comments in. And I will be back again next week or the week after. So I'll see you later.
Take care.
Take care, Paul. Bye.